Off the Ball.
GAA. It's going to be a feature of the championship this year. Long kick outs, taking out all the rubbish hand passing, all the sideways stuff, all the negativity. Go long, risk reward.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
It is a pleasure to be joining both James Skell and Paul Murphy on this Monday morning as we're recording, because we're looking back at what was an epic Saturday, particularly on Lee's side, Patrick Horgan's late penalty after Shane Kingston had decided he was going to take the game on his own back with a few minutes left against the All-Ireland champions Limerick, ran a goal, gets dragged down by Kyle Hayes, and Patrick Horgan, the coolest man in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, went, "I actually quite fancy taking this penalty," beats Nicky Quaid, and Cork complete a comeback when it seemed that Limerick, when they were 4 points up, were almost home and hosed. And it was going to be the same story, where a team in the first half had raced out to a lead, Limerick come back, Flanagan gets his hat-trick, they get their victory, and Limerick are preparing for a Munster final with a game to spare. But Cork have given themselves, at the very least, a stay of execution of a week before they play against Tipperary. But when their backs were against the wall, Cork come out on top in the highest scoring game in Munster Senior Hurling Championship history. Probably one of the best games we've seen in the decade. Maybe one of the best games that we've been treated to of all time. So that was the drama in the Munster Hurling Championship. In Leinster, who knows who's getting to the final now at this stage? Because Kilkenny were held by Carlow. In the end, it was Marty Kavanagh's. He held his nerve a little bit like Patrick Horgan. His ninth score of the game, very, very late on, pretty much the last puck of the ball, rescuing a draw for Carlow against Kilkenny. We'll get Paul Murphy's take on that Kilkenny performance. But Carlow up and running in the Leinster Hurling Championship. Dublin, late finish really from them, but they put Antrim to the sword, and Dublin now are well placed to qualify, and indeed they can probably think about getting to a Leinster final after a big win for Micheál Donoghue's side on Saturday afternoon. And again, GAA Go is back in the spotlight. We've got accusations of dereliction of duty from the GAA about hurling at this stage. Even the Taoiseach Simon Harris has been talking about hurling not being on free-to-air TV. So again, it's coming up, because it's come up in your comments that have come in as well. So firstly, Paul Murphy, how are you getting on?
Good, how are you?
How is Bruce Springsteen in Kilkenny?
He was outstanding, excellent, as you'd expect him to be. Yeah, huge crowd, great atmosphere. We got sunny weather. It's a bit rainy here now this morning, so thankfully it held up last night. But no, it was a brilliant night.
The Kilkenny performance in Carlow probably didn't quite match Springsteen on Sunday night. James Skell, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm okay, thank you.
First comment as well. So again, we had last week, Dublin's Fair City came back, had a pop at you in the live chat when the video was going out last week, and then that wasn't just enough value, had to go into the YouTube comments as well and create a bit of a culture war about what's happening around farming by saying, I've had enough of this farming, NFL, not happening. And then loads of people going, don't let the lads hide their personality, you know, continue, keep this going. And then the first on the YouTube last night, first on the Twitter, I should say, overnight, when we stuck up the questions for Instagram and Twitter, was again, no farming, please. Coming in from Adam, no farmer chat, please. So again, I'm not sure if it's going to come up organically, but I don't think we're going to intentionally not talk about things that we're actually interested in. But continually, the no farming chat comes up over and over again. I don't know how you feel about this, Gail. I know it's something you're very passionate about.
I reckon you could take a guess how I feel about it. Not even about the topic itself, but about people trying to, let's say, censor it. Mm-hmm. Or Dub Fair City, whatever your name is, and Adam, you can go take a hike. Hop over there to some other less podcast while I give a shite you. So, you aren't about not hiding personality. There you go. Now, I'm a bit hot now after the weekend too.
It's just a little bit.
I had 50 hours with my three kids on my own.
Right.
Yeah. Mrs. has gone on a hen, her sister's hen. Now, when I say on my own, I had slight help from my mother and two female siblings. So, slight. Oh, it's a hard task, lads. Oh, Jesus Christ, it's a hard task.
I'm sorry, but you're looking for a lot of credit there, where you were sharing the load around at least four people. You've just said, I had them on my own for a full 50 hours. I don't know how I coped.
Well, I started off taking credit, but then obviously I can't, because they listen to the podcast. And I already got enough heat from my younger sister saying that I didn't get any help on the farm, which... Not from her anyway, but however, they provide a super assistance this weekend, and I'd be lost without them. Like, children just won't take instruction. they just don't take it. Like, everything, lads at work will take it, young lads at the training will take it, even the cattle abroad in the field will take it, but a three-year-old doesn't give a shit. And like, I had this thing down to a T, right, whereby if I come into a room and I say, if I count to three, there's going to be trouble, right? And my second child is she's the carbon copy of me at that age. So now she's beginning to imitate me, you know, which is so annoying. Like, so I said to her, Esme, if you don't clean up this, I'm going to count to three. So I went 1, 2, and then she finished off and went 3. That's it to say, what are you going to do? Like, and I look at her, like, she's 2 foot nothing. What are you supposed to do with her? Like, she just keeps going. So that's the hardest part of parenting for me.
I would suggest finding a better threat than just 1, 2, 3, where she knows there's no consequences.
Yeah, but like, even I said to her yesterday, like, I said, I'm going to throw one of your toys in the bin if you don't listen. And what did she do? She went and got her least favorite toy and handed it to me. You know, as if, here, I don't care what you do. I don't care. I am exacerbated with what to do with that child.
You know, you need to reward a child who knows to go for the worst toy and say, look, actually, I was going to get rid of this anyway, Dad, so you're saving me hassle.
She's clever, yeah, she's clever. Mm-hmm. But when you contrast it, the eldest one then is polar opposite. It's like a different type of parenting entirely. I have to say, like, I hope they won't listen to this in their older. She's an absolute angel, like the older one, you know. Whereas the second one is like, I've been sent here to destroy you.
Well, welcome to Dadcast, or the Hurling Pod, here on Off the Ball with Borgosh Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. So the five highest scoring games in the history of the Munster Senior Hurling Championship have all happened since 2021. And Cork have been involved in two of them in recent weeks. That defeat they had against Clare, where they came out on the wrong side, and then on Saturday, where they come out on the right side, beating Limerick by 328 to 326. So the All-Ireland champions have not taken a fatal blow, but they've taken a glancing blow, you would say, by this defeat on Saturday night at Porkycueve. Absolute thriller. Patrick Horgan, a goal and 11 points. Seamus Harnady and Shane Barrett were 1-2 apiece. And then on the Limerick side, Seamus Flanagan, it was all about him. And the story, I think, if Cork hadn't battled back at the end, would have been the Cork puck out, kind of misfunctioning at times when it went short in the second half, risk and reward, and Seamus Flanagan scoring 3-3, and we would have been talking about how Limerick didn't quite play to their normal standard in the first half, but then found that extra gear in the second half, and they won, and why would anyone ever doubt them? But Cork didn't read that script, Paul Murphy, in the end, and they fought back with a few points before we went in towards injury time to get it back to a manageable distance, and then Kingston decided to just run at a green wall. And I don't know how you feel from a defensive point of view. Firstly, should it have been a penalty? And secondly, why does Kyle Hayes drag him down?
Straight in with the hard one.
Yeah, straight in with the hard one.
What's the penalty, Murph? Come on.
Do you know what? Like, when I saw it first, I went, oh, was there defenders back that could have got to him? That means maybe it shouldn't have been a penalty. But then afterwards, in fairness, Seamus Hickey even said it on GA Go. He was just saying that's exactly where the rule came in, is to discourage this type of behaviour. And when I thought about that, I was going, well, yeah, feck it, that should have been a penalty. Because, like, if you look at where Kingston came from, he came from, like, I think the sideline nearly on the 65, ran straight through. He was after carving them up. There was a goal opportunity on there, and who knows what was going to happen. And, like, what I would have done probably what Kyle Hayes done. Like, if I thought it wasn't going to be a penalty, I would have done it. But in the scenario, was it a goal opportunity? I'd go, yeah, I think it was a goal opportunity. Like, it is... I'd completely listen to somebody if they were saying, no, that wasn't a penalty. If you look at the rule and so on, that's where it gets a little bit grey. But was it a goal scoring opportunity? Like, you see the excitement that was produced as a result of it, and a deserving, like, I think people feel it was a deserving penalty in that Shane Kingston was after cutting up Limerick. He was getting through. It looked like there was something on for Cork, and Kyle Hayes just looks to kill it. But should the benefit be there with the defender? No, it should be there with the attacker. So I'm happy a penalty was given. You could probably look at the rule book and say, pull it apart and go, well, technically, maybe it shouldn't have been. But I'm happy a penalty was given. And I think in terms of discouraging that type of play going forward, I think it was actually a positive move that, you know, they went and Sean Thack went and, yeah, 100%, that's a penalty. So I'm happy to say it was a penalty. And, like, you look at there's an end view of that penalty put up where it, from behind Patrick Horgan onto the hill, and the reaction on the hill was unbelievable. Like, it was just, I think that few moments there, the game flipped on its head. That excitement alone was definitely one of the moments of the championship this year. So, like, I'm how that played out, I'm more than happy to say, yeah, that was the right decision.
Was it the right decision by Hayes to drag him down? You said you would have thought about it yourself. Obviously, it was the risk of giving away a penalty and getting yourself a black card. You would have had to take that into consideration and maybe the split second when you decide to pull a player down. But should he have let it keep going? Because, you know, there were some covering defenders coming around. So potentially, do you roll the dice and say, right, I'm going to chase him as best I can. Maybe he gets past me and I've got to hope that either Nicky Quaid saves this or somebody does get back around.
Yeah, there was loads of defenders back. So I think there was and real top quality defenders that are just going to maybe get a flick and not commit to it, just get a flick, kill the play and just move the ball out and off you go. But I maybe think that Kyle Hayes thought that a penalty wasn't going to be given because there were defenders back potentially, because it looked like that he was maybe a bit surprised when the penalty was given. And even a few of the Limerick lads were kind of going, Jesus, that was, they looked like they expected a 21 as opposed to a penalty. So I don't think Kyle Hayes is going, oh, is there or isn't there a penalty here? I think he was fully sure that there wasn't going to be a penalty because there was defenders back. But if knowing now what I knew then, like, obviously you wouldn't be going risking giving Patrick Corrigan a penalty. So like at the time, you know, if you're taking a glance over your shoulder and you see, you know, I think Cathal O'Neill was there, I think Barry Nash was there, there was a good few defenders, you know, you're thinking three of us here should be enough to just stifle Shane Kingston. That's all you're looking to do. You don't even need to get a clean block on him. So, yeah, you could put it down to a poor decision from Kyle Hayes. But I think in the rush at the moment, 70 minutes into a game, you know, you're out on your feet. I think he thought that maybe Shane Kingston was far enough from goal that the referee would just give a 21 and there was enough defenders back. So it's a great benefit having the fullness of time, having, you know, all the knowledge we do of what the referee was going to do. But in the moment, I couldn't say that in the moment I wouldn't have potentially done the same thing if I thought there wasn't going to be a penalty given.
Skell, you said I was jumping straight in by asking about the penalty and you were putting pressure on Murph there. In your opinion, is Sean Sack got that one right?
I think he has now. There is an omission on my behalf here. Whereby when I first heard of the rule, I thought it was very similar to soccer, like in a last man back situation, whereby if it was... If the forward was between the last defender and the keeper and he fouled him, that was a penalty. So I reread the rule again thinking, you know, well, Limerick had cover back there. So my interpretation was, well, if there's cover, you've denied a certain goal. Now, it's not certain goal, it's the wrong language, and that's my issue.
It's goal a goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah. So when I read that and said, right, goal scoring opportunity, I need to go back now and I need to say, right, that one, Limerick versus Cork, that is a penalty. And then also Galan versus Clare, that is a penalty. So... That one, when I watched that one back again, I said, yeah, that's definitely a penalty because that was nearly last man back situation. But so I'd say in terms of Sean Steck and his interpretation of the rule and also his adaption of it, it's correct. And overall, I think we'll touch on the referee very quickly. Very good game. You know, huge contributor. And it's very, like, it's very positive for you and I and Murph to talk about a game without the presence of a referee. Basically went through the game anonymous. So that was a really good refereeing display on his behalf. But I think if the penalty, it's very hard for people to argue, and you'd want to show, you know, a major grievance to previous decisions if you wanted to deny that had been a penalty, or major bias. You know what I mean? I can understand both. If you didn't get the rub of the green previously, you know, or you're from Limerick and, you know, a diehard, you could say that's not a penalty, but ultimately to a neutral,
it was. You make an interesting point, by the way, with the way that Limerick people respond. So obviously we've seen, I think a lot of people have put up a screenshot of, here's where the foul took place at the weekend just gone by, which was given as a penalty, and then the Galan one against Clare, which wasn't given as a penalty. And I kind of wonder if context plays into this a little bit as well, Skell, whereby game is on the line at the moment it happens in the Cork game. The people are very accepting that that's a penalty as a result. While the Galan one happened earlier in the game against Clare, and so there's maybe less of a furore about the fact that that wasn't given because it didn't feel like it was a game-defining moment.
Well, game-defining timing is everything. Like, so the penalty was the game-defining moment. Like, this is a... like, Sean Steck, regardless of where the game was situated, Páirc Uí Chaoimh or Gaelic Grounds, there's still bravery to give that decision. And it's where he kind of removed, I have to say, the direct emotion of it. You know what I mean? And just made the decision. Just made a quick, informed decision. So there's credit from there. And I see how sometimes referees, yes, if it's early in the game, they'd be nearly reluctant to make a decision, whether it be sending off a fella, you know, booking someone, giving a specific penalty, because they'll have time to right the wrong if he gets it wrong. You know what I mean? Whereas obviously in the mid towards the end, sometimes referees can make decisions far different than what they did in the first quarter. But I don't think if you ask the vast majority of hurling people in neutrals, you know, was that a penalty or not, they'll all tick the yes box. I do think so. And because, let's say, Limerick have been aggrieved from before, which now I can say, yes, they have. They have been aggrieved. You know, it doesn't, it shouldn't influence your, you know, your objectivity now at the minute. So, but look, what a finish by Horgan. Jesus, like, that's, you know, and like, even if he took it so fast, right, that the screen could barely keep up with him, which I have issues with the screen in the first place, that platform. But even Nicky Quaid, let's say, he judged the right side, which was correct on his behalf, because he thought Morgan would go across his body. But it was just the simple power of the shot and elevation, which was really, really hard to save. And sometimes you're looking at lads taking penalties, and they can really kind of trying to adapt a reverse psychology approach to the goalkeeper. Just flip and lamp it. Like, lamp it that hard, and it's going to be scored. You know what I mean? I obviously that in soccer. Like, why don't you just thump it? Like, I know there's a chance to go over the bar, but when you have someone like a marksman, like a Horgan or a Reed, you know, just flitter it. Like, just flitter it as hard as you can, and let the rest take care of itself. But then what about the last three? Wasn't that clever? Like, I thought, do you remember Horgan's last three, where they got the last point?
Yeah.
Like, I thought Pat Ryan would come out to him and tell him, just, you know, make sure the ball goes dead. Don't keep it in live play. But to play into a corner, Jesus, that was a ballsy move by both people. You know? So, but it was a ballsy court performance, you know, which I don't think I've said in this podcast ever. I don't think I've ever said that was a ballsy, brave court performance, you know.
Do you know what Joe struck me with that last three? It's funny you mentioned it now. It struck me of 2013, the drawn game against Clare, the sideline, where I'd say if they had all their time back, they would have just tipped it down to the corner, stood over it, got into a ruck, wear down the clock for 20 or 30 seconds, and you win the All-Ireland, but they went for it. Yeah. So, it's a different scenario, I know, but part of me was there going, you're a point up now, do you give Limerick another opportunity, or do you go down to the corner? Now, was it Connolly, was it Alan Connolly there, you know, ball pops down into the hand, and he had the ball then to go, and actually I'm going to take this on and pop over a point, brilliant, but the presence of mind to go, okay, we're a point up, Patrick Horgan could put this over the bar, and Nicky Quaid is going to be standing with the ball in the hand. Let's say if he hits it wide, Limerick will get another opportunity, most likely. Like, I mean, if they get the ball out quick enough, they'll get another chance. So that ball into the corner was actually much better idea, regardless, let's say, of Connolly putting the ball over the bar. It was a much better idea overall that even if you didn't win the ball is now stuck down the corner, bring it into a ruck, and wear down 20 seconds or whatever it's going to be. So I just, the presence of mind, I really liked that they thought about that with just a few seconds to go, you know.
Well, especially Murph in a shootout as well, because the temptation would be, let's just keep going at this. Who knows how many more scores are needed? So you could easily just get a rush of blood to the head and go, right, we're going to try and actually outscore them here, even with 60-odd seconds left on the clock. Because I guess the way the narrative is probably remembered after the game finishes, you remember the penalty going in, and it's almost like the full-time whistle happens, and next thing, everyone runs onto the pitch. Well, Cork still had that kind of dangerous minute or so after that where they could well have conceded and it all goes wrong.
Completely, yeah. And like, literally, that just comes down to the game management. They're just saying, right, we're up by a point. We have momentum here now. Now, we want to kind of, where we were taking the game to Limerick, let's say, from the moment, let's say Shane Kingston goes running at Limerick and we kind of think, okay, Limerick are maybe out the gate here. They're home and hosed. Cork start upping the pace and go running at Limerick. But then once they take the lead again, they go, right, what do we want to do here? Well, actually, we want to slow things back down again, as opposed to, like, intuition would tell you, keep the momentum up, keep going at them. But keeping going at them means that you're probably going to create opportunities for Limerick to come back at you. So when you're actually going, right, well, let's, like, strike the ball down into the corner, take this thing out of it. If we don't win the ball, at least it's in the least dangerous position on the pitch that they can't, it's going to take them 10 or 15 seconds to get up the pitch. And at which stage we're probably after parking the bus as well. We have a lot of lads back. So it's that presence of mind at the moment to go, what's good in the first minute? Okay, well, is that good for us now in this last minute? No, it's not. We're managing the clock here now. It's not about managing the scoreboard anymore, managing the clock. So it's just that presence of mind and the, I suppose, having a bit of IQ to go, right, well, what's good for us right now? It's a great decision. And a ballsy decision at that, like, you know.
Skell, I want to ask you one maybe which is a little bit questionable from the officials, which was 72 and a half minutes are on the clock when I look at this screenshot here. And as the ball is going over the bar for the Limerick point, which had given them 325 in the scoreboard at that stage, the umpire is handing Patrick Collins a slitter as the ball is going over the bar. This is the quick puck out. And John Kiley talked about it afterwards. He said, quote, "My issue isn't with the penalty. Haven't seen that. My issue would actually be at the other end of the field. We had scored a point and almost got punished, if you like. The ball was poked literally as the ball went over the bar. But anyway, it is what it is. So it's not like a massive complaint from John Kiley. But the rule is that the whistle has to blow after the ball has gone over the bar. You can take a quick one now after a wide. But should the umpire be handing Patrick Collins a slitter while the ball is still in the air, Scott?
That's a no, first of all. I think even the umpire handed him the slitter was the guy who was on the point side, the white side.
He was on the near side, yeah.
But he was on the white flag side.
Yeah.
So that means he needs to go waving the white flag and handed the ball at the same time, which is quite contradictory somehow. But before every game, what happens is the referee will come into you. Will this be club or county? And he'll always say the same thing. It's always two things they'll always hit you. One, stay inside the square when you're poking the ball. And two, wait for my whistle on a score specifically, right? So I'll always ask them, can I poke it fast on a wide? And they go, yeah, on a wide, I have no work to do. I have nothing to write down. You know what I mean? So I have no I have no reason to look away from the play. But on a score, wait till I'm outside the 21 or 45 and give me a chance to write and blow the whistle. That's what they all say to you. So what you do is you test the boundaries. You poke one short, you poke one very fast every day. Every day I do it. And if the ref lets it off, okay, now I see what time kind of timing is letting off. Now go back to that game. Limerick 6 point, the one Morris gets the first half. Collins gets the ball. He pokes it fast. Referee blows the whistle. This is at the time now when probably Collins had, I don't know who the ball went to, but possession was received. And the ref blows the ball back and says, you know, basically, recheck it again, it's gone too fast. So now he set a precedence, right? So he should follow through. So that when Collins gets the ball in the second half, when that point went over, the last Limerick point, and he lets it off, he should have blown it again. But he didn't, he let it off. And it's like, it's the only one issue I'd have had the whole game. And here's me saying, well, he had a great game. And he did have a great game. But it's just the one little thing where if he let them fast balls go in the first half, then, you know, it's a precedence for the whole team. Basically, whether it be Cork or Limerick, he can do this. These are the parameters now of the timing of the puckouts. But he did pull one back on Cork, and Cork specifically, and he let that one off. I think the ball went straight to Kingston, didn't it? It was a straight ball to Kingston.
Yeah, basically he catches Limerick unawares, which is, I guess, the point that Kylie is kind of subtly making, which is that it's not so much the penalty he has an issue with. It's like Limerick were caught as they were resetting. And I suppose Limerick are so good at this as well, yeah. And the way that they will go up and they'll put pressure on you, as we saw, and we'll talk about maybe some of the turnovers for the goals and the shorter puckouts, that Limerick like to get reset, and it's partly why they shoot as much as they do. Like, there's an open secret that they know possession is coming back if you have to puck it back. And in this case, there's no way they could have been prepared for a reset while they're waiting for a ball to go over the bar.
Correct. And if you look at the camera view then, when it zooms in, you can see Kyle Hayes in the background screaming at pointing. And it's obvious he's pointing to Kingston because he's not picked up. It's a known fact that the faster you get the ball back into play after an opposition score, the more chance you have of there being, well, there's a definite chance you have of there being a disconnectivity between the defence and forward, etc. So you'll find a gap. If you give someone like a Limerick specifically time over 7-8 seconds to get reset, you have to formulate a puck out, you know what I mean, as opposed to getting one off the cuff. And it's like the ball is still in play, you know. That's how fast Collins got the ball off. And in fairness to Kingston, like, you have to understand what he's after doing. Like, he's after doing something to Limerick that I've never seen done before. Takes them on and runs around three lads, popping over their heads and then heads for the black spot. Like, that takes two things. One is serious bravery. And two is the wherewithal that, look, we're a couple of points down. We have to go for this. You know what I mean? And they just go for it. Like, that alone was, you know, it signified their intent from day one, which is absolutely fabulous. But we'll touch on the puckouts and how they got onto it and how they got so much fruition. But it just, he went down that side, let's call it the five side, and it came through that way. I don't think if you go to the seven side, you come through that way. It's no coincidence that Kyle Hayes had to shoot across, you know what I mean, for cover, because that was kind of, unfortunately, the Limerick weak side all day. But look, Cork found the gap. They found gaps everywhere. They found the weaknesses. They exploited them. They came in with a positive game plan, not a defensive game plan, and they got the reward. So as we always say to teams when they provide a good performance, kudos to them.
Right. Murph, that is not the expected gap you would have had or an expected weak side, given the way that Dermot Burns has played. What happened to that Limerick half backline, and particularly over on that side of the defence during the game, that became a problem for them?
Well, it was from the moment the ball was thrown in. Like, one of the things I noticed straight away, and it was Seamus Harandy quite specifically, kept popping up two or three times in the first half. Like, Seamus Harandy got 1-2 for the day, and I think he got the 1-2 in the first 15 minutes or so. It seemed like there was a very deliberate, I suppose, ploy by Cork to, whatever way they were going to do it, there was one player slipping in the back each time. Because it was remarkable on long puckouts, which is completely uncharacteristic out of Limerick that there was a player free for Cork. Like, I couldn't figure out how this was happening. But and the thing is, unless you're in the stadium or unless you see from behind the goal what they were doing, it's very hard to make it out on television. But with Seamus Harnady, it was just unbelievable. Nearly every time he was found just between that, if you're saying from the Cork play, from the Cork area in the field, between the 12 and 15 position, he was just standing in there picking up balls. And which was another unbelievable fact, was just picking up balls and having time to turn and either run at the Limerick defence or just have a shot at goal and uncontested, really. And it was something we just haven't seen. It was absolutely, you know, like, I have to go back as far as maybe Tipperary back in 2021, I think it was, maybe 22, where Tipperary actually achieved the same thing out on Dermot Burns' side, where they managed just to unsettle that side of the field, open it up a small bit and create a lot of opportunities. And to be fair to Cork, they actually left a few more opportunities behind them. Like, there was actually a few moments where I think Seamus Harnady, maybe even Mark Coleman got a ball, and they actually, the commentator even said it, they nearly had so much space that it nearly put them off. They actually put the ball wide. But they created so much opportunity where it wasn't even a case that a player had a second on the ball. Player had 2 or 3 seconds, get the head up, run up, decide, am I going to go for goal here or am I going to pop the ball over the bar? But in, they managed to do something which a lot of teams haven't done, drag the Limerick half back line around, create the opportunity for one player slips in behind the back door. And in fairness, the players down the field then, the Cork defenders, and were getting the head up and they were actually looking for this player, as opposed to, now the other side is, something we've said a lot about as well here, is that striking the ball into the D to Limerick is a dangerous thing to be doing. They reaped massive reward from it on the weekend. And part of that, I mean, you look at the first two goals, you look at what they did, is that two things. You kind of have to take a gamble on it. Like, you just kind of have to time a run, take a chance that the ball is going to break left or right, and hope that a Limerick man doesn't go up and win it cleanly. And the two times they gambled, players were running off the shoulder, good catches, a combination of different things, and they reaped the reward. And that's something that we would have said, if you're playing against Limerick, that's something to avoid. Don't strike long ball down on top of that D, because they'll mop it up. But the rule book was almost thrown out the window from those two areas of Seamus Harnady or another Cork player find themselves free in the Limerick half back line. And then the other side, landing the ball on the D and reaping huge rewards from it. Like, Skell, before we came on, you even said that you were nearly surprised that they started going with short puckouts, because while the going was good and you're winning things off those long puckouts, why not keep going? Because it seemed to be that Limerick were trying to figure out what's going wrong. And the only thing I could see was that, plain and simple, Cork were just getting up. They were just there, I'm going to be the first person up. Like, Seamus Harnady, great catch there in the first half. Long puckout comes down. And he wasn't looking at, who am I going competing with? You know, what Limerick man is up? He just eyes for the ball, competed. And there was no Limerick lad as hungry as him to go and win the ball. And that just seemed to be, you know, the story for the day at times, where, you know, we can overcomplicate it at times. We can say there's different tactics and so on. But when Cork came with the attitude of just the savagery to go for the ball, that nearly negated any other tactic then, because they were just, they found themselves in the position to win the ball each time. Yeah. So there's you know, it's so funny at times here, you can pull this whole thing apart and go, this is how they do it. And it's, you know, it's layers upon layers. And then suddenly Cork turn up with a game plan that's very much back to basics, pure aggression, going trying to win the ball. And when they got that primary possession, pop off the shoulder, goal, point. And you were nearly kind of going, Jesus, this looks too easy, you know. So, but look, it was one of the things I have to say with Cork though as well, is just that, like, the attitude, like, we spoke a few weeks ago and like, lads were laughing when I said that I thought Cork were going to beat Waterford really well. The only thing for me, that the factor that they didn't beat Waterford, was just the attitude. Like the skill, they have loads of it. Pace, strength, they have loads of it. They have loads of hurlers. But for me, the only thing that will define Cork's day is just their attitude. Like, if they turn up, if Cork turn up playing the way they played on Saturday evening, they beat every team in the country, really. Like, no, they can't do that every evening. It's a very hard thing to get yourself to that pitch of a level every single game. You probably can't do it, and you can probably only do it in your face in Limerick. But the potential is there. I think this is the thing that frustrates people about Cork, is that they know the potential is there, but what Cork is going to turn up. And we've probably said it for years here, but, you know, I think everybody as a neutral would love to go and see Cork being the team that they are Saturday night. And, like, it just adds another element to this whole championship, that if they turn up performing like that, they're such a dangerous beast when they're playing like that. And it's probably the Cork that we traditionally associate with Cork hurling, that in your face, hitting hard, loads of scores and pure fiery hurling. And it's just, we saw it Saturday night. The killing thing is will we see it again? That's the good, big question now going forward.
Yeah, so 40-odd thousand were in there, Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Huge turnout for the game. Again, it's another bumper crowd at the Munster Hurling Championship game. How did you feel, Murph, about the fact that many of that 40,000 ran onto the pitch after a win in the middle of the group stage, where there is that game against Tipperary, which is going to again be season-defining next week? Is that the understandable response of Cork supporters having come back against Limerick? Or is this an overreaction by going on to have a pitch-side celebration?
I think it was... I don't think you would have had this reaction if it was any other team than Limerick. I think it was just the fact that it was very much in the moment, teams run or supporters running onto the field. But like the other side is like, I would be always saying that you have to have patience with your team. Now, to an extent, you don't have unlimited patience. But, you know, last week people were calling for Pat Ryan's head, and this week they're invading the pitch. You know, as in, there has to be a balance where somewhere that you recognise that performances aren't up to standard, but then also when you win, you go, okay, well, let's temper this with a little bit of balance and go. But like, I find it hard to like, I mean, not criticise supporters, but if supporters run onto the field because the emotion in the moment decides that we're going to go onto the field here and celebrate happy days. The only thing I'd be saying though, from a player's point of view, for a Cork, I'd be nearly going to get in off the pitch now, because you don't want to necessarily get swept up in this, in terms of if you're focusing for Tipperary now next weekend, best thing you want to do is go, great performance, let's stick to what the performance was and let's not, you know, be carried on the shoulders off the field or anything like that. Like, you know, you kind of want to temper your mindset to go, well, let's bring this forward next week. At the end of the day, they've won the same amount of games now as they've won last year when they didn't qualify. Like, that's the hard facts. And they have to focus on this in terms of have a killer instinct on it. They won one match, but at the end of the day, one match isn't going to get you out of Munster. They need to go now and perform. And I think the whole setup around Cork has to, like, I mean, if I was a Cork supporter at the moment, I wouldn't be going around, you know, filling any of the Cork players. If you see them in the street there, if you see them in a shop, I wouldn't be going filling their head with anything that they don't need, you know, as in, temper this victory. So in terms of coming onto the field and celebrating, I've nothing against it. I actually thought the scenes were great, but I know other people will go, oh sure, it's one win, you haven't actually won anything yet, you know, should you? Our good friend here mightn't agree with it either.
over to our good friend, what do you make of it, Scott?
There's a lot to unpack there, Murphy. You've got a lot of good points. I'm going to start on the pitch invasion. Yeah,
and feel free to obviously completely disagree, because I know you're maybe not a fan of it.
No, it's my nature anyway. My nature is like, you know,
doom and gloom.
Wait until the fat lady sings, like, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely, yeah.
That's my nature. My nature is like, hey, look, we're here evading the pitch. And I can understand you get caught in the emotion as a fan group, whereby, you know, the last 18 months, 24 months have been poor to be a supporter. I get that, right?
And they've just won an absolutely insane game.
A belter. They've won a belter, right? And I can understand Saturday evening, probably a few pints on board with a few people. I get how, you know, the excitement levels would go to a huge level. And that's fine. You can't control what supporters do. I'm okay with that. Whatever the supporters do, let them do. That's entirely their prerogative. But player group, I'm with you, Murph. Get off the pitch. Let the supporters go and let them go out and let them go on the pitch. You know, get in. We have a job to do. We could still be out of the championship, like, you know, within a couple of weeks. So it's not as if we've anything won. Now, what I mean by the fat lady, if they go on and win Munster, by Jesus, let rip then. Let rip with a pitch invasion. Let rip it however way you see fit. But just as a player, let's back it up now. Because they've always been questioned. And I said there a couple of weeks ago, like, I don't trust them. Right? So now what they've done is they've provided a fabulous performance. And nearly we've to review every team now. This is in the whole championship, Munster and Leinster, on each individual performance they produce. Because no team is providing back-to-back excellent performances. Rare. There's rare. So Cork have produced a brilliant performance. They've downed Limerick shooting 3.28, which is off the charts. Now go and do it again. And go do it when it's away. You know what I mean? So go do it in a venue that's going to be trickier than your home venue. And if you do it again, then by Jesus, you get products from us, but you get products from nationally. And then your supporters will really get behind you. Because it all counts for sweet FO if you don't back it up again. If they go out now and put in a relatively poor performance, you know, that'll hurt everyone even more. But the thing is, the cat's out of the bag now. So Tipperary will have a chance to, I won't say review this game to death, but they'll have seen how Cork got a lot of their joy. So now you're going in with a game plan where you're going to, I'll say, a Cotlin rig to a degree. by surprise. But now the other team is not surprised. The other team is expecting this. So can you back it up now and go over potentially a plan B? You know, so like in fairness to Limerick, you know, this is all Cork. Like the Limerick lost to the, you know, they lost the first half by 8 points, but then they won the second half by 6 points. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as if they got absolutely trounced in the second half too. Like they were just within a, you know, a whisker of winning the game. So, but that's what I liked most probably about Cork. I suppose here I am praising Limerick, but Cork, they just grounded out. They just, you know, they found a way to win it. Whereas
is it Limerick, a repeating pattern with Limerick though, lads, where the first halves have been, let's say, far from the level that we're accustomed to with them? And the thing is, against Clare and against Tipperary, they then produce that second half performance and they win the games. We saw something fairly similar happen, and that's like, that's taken into account, Murph, as well. Cork's savage intensity, the work rate, everything else that you praised already, which helped them within that first half. And like Nicky Quaid's had to make a couple of good saves, for Cork could have had more goals in the first half. Like genuinely, Cork could have been out of sight at half time and maybe should have been. But then Limerick are able to kind of reset and then come back in the way that we expected in the second half. But is it becoming a pattern now? And is there a possibility that maybe this is a repeating and concerning pattern for Limerick now that we've seen them in three games, that something has been a little bit off in the first half of all three?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's almost a trademark that people associate now with Limerick that, you know, they're down by... Like, I spoke to someone there at halftime during the game on Saturday. People were like, oh, they're down by 8 or whatever, but they're going to win by 9. Like, you know, it's kind of a trademark that this is what Limerick do. But I think what was significant with Cork was that Cork responded straight away anytime Limerick hit them with a significant score. Like, if you look at Flanagan's first score, a minute later, Shane Barrett hits the net. Like, that's huge. Now, not every team can go and do that and go and respond and straight away get a goal. But if you look at then Limerick's great start in the second half, like another player we haven't mentioned, Darragh Fitzgibbon was outstanding. Like five points from play is outstanding. But the times where he got his scores were also really important as well. So Limerick come out at the start of the second half. They get a few scores. The ball is rolling. Darragh Fitzgibbon picks up a ball. I think he's taken on Will O'Donoghue and he's, you know, Kyle Hayes or someone. But there's a few sizable players there. He takes them on, runs in, gets a great score. And it almost like settles... It almost settles Cork again. And then another Seamus Flanagan goal scored again in the second half. And again, Fitzgibbon steps up, gets a point, and almost kind of resets. Like, Cork responded really well. And that was something that was going brilliant. Like, they've been hit several times, but they've responded each time. And that was something that was important for Cork, or any team to go and beat Limerick, is that you respond straight away. But where I think it was a learning curve for every team watching on was that, you know, Cork were 5 points down, or 5 minutes ago, they were 4 points down. They were still within striking distance. Whereas, naturally, we were looking at this going, you know, Limerick are going to slowly get out of sight here and, you know, see the game out, and it's going to be another Limerick victory. Whereas Cork were in touching distance. It felt like the game was going to peter out and then suddenly hit Limerick again. So it just showed the pattern that, a new element, I suppose, too, with that, we normally associate Limerick going, okay, maybe they're down by 5, 6, 7 points at halftime. You know, blitz the team then in the second half and then just see out the game and cruise. But the latest element now that we've seen is Cork hitting them in the last 5 minutes and bringing that panic back into the game to their benefit. So that was something where I was just, I actually had a great admiration for what Cork did at the weekend, that they didn't, any time Limerick got their little purple patch or got a big score, they reacted quickly and it was very deliberate and it was, you know, it was aggressive and we're going for a score here. And it's very tough to go back to the well several times to do that. But Cork did it, and you have to give them great credit. So I'd be looking at, if you look at significant scores for Limerick, you look at the other end then within the next minute, 2 minutes, in fairness to Cork, they went down and they got scores. And that for me was that a kind of a subtle tale within the story that facilitated Cork actually going and still being in with a shout in the last few minutes. And then, let's say, creating the opportunities in the last 5 to actually go and win the game. So I think a lot of teams look at that and go, lads, you know, regardless what Limerick throw at us, we have to respond straight away and balance the scales out again. If they hit us for a goal, at least get a point on the board, get 2 points on the board. Brilliant if we get a goal, but responding being the most important thing.
Yeah, I want to put a few of the comments from the listeners to you on this game, but Keane, who's a long listener of ours, who's a Cork season ticket holder, wanted to raise a few points. So this came as a DM as opposed to just in the small comment box, but said a few things from the game. Please give Pat Collins his praise. 3-12 off our puck out at the weekend after Clare had scored 2-6 off our puck out 2 weeks ago. It was also refreshing to see a great performance from Sean Stack. We've been on the wrong end of many decisions along the way, black and red cards in Waterford, the penalty against Limerick last year. But in fairness to Stack, he gave the penalty at the end, which many other refs would have said was a free and a yellow. To finish, the atmosphere was incredible at the park on Saturday night. I've never seen anything like it in all the games we've been to in 10 years where I've been a season ticket holder now. People were crying around me in the stands at full time. And while I know there's nothing won, and by any means are we closer to getting out, Cork people are only dying to get behind the team, and the outpouring of emotion at the end says it all, especially for people like myself who were very young in 04 and in 05. So that's just probably maybe gives a contrast to why Cork fans were so excited at the end. And just on that puck out point as well, Skell, because Collins took plenty of flack after the Clare game because of the concessions and because of, I'd say by his own admission, a misfire of some of the more risky puck outs that he took at times in that game. Now, he took risks in this game as well, but when it comes to risk-reward, Cork did so well off their puck out at the weekend that he does deserve praise after what happened against Clare.
Well, yes, and I myself was critical after the Clare game because I thought he gave away 1-5. But he gave away 1-5 from poor execution technically, not decision-making, but just poor execution. So like not striking the ball enough distance, you know, wrong trajectory, you know, getting cut out, etc. So he could, truthfully speaking, could be faulted for it, you know. But in this instance, right, what Cork did was they applied or adopted a more traditional approach whereby they just they went long with an awful lot of things, right? And Murphy, you were talking there about, you know, the Cork setup in terms of the forwards. Like, so what I noticed heavily was that their two corner forwards stayed in at the 14, like, you know, really narrow, nearly the width of the goalpost. And then Brian Hayes in, let's say, was nearly the top of the triangle, like a little triangle in front of them. So they kept their foot forward really narrow. And what Collins was able to do then was, on the puck out, he was able to bypass the Limerick half back line, go over them, because he was aided by a breeze a bit, and make the landing target one of the big men inside. So it happened to be Hayes at one stage, and then Harnedy. So two things happened. One was Cork knew this was coming. This was their setup. This was their intent, you know, and they just hit with massive pace in the half forward lane. And two, Collins had a choice just to go long. That was it. Just go long. So what you do then is you take out all the technical difficulty of it and just make him execute easily, you know, which brings down your risk way down, right? But potentially against Limerick in history, it brings down your reward also. But here in this game, the reward went way up just by chance, just because there was so much energy. And even when, as you said, Murph, I was thinking when they went short for the first book out, I was thinking myself that there was no reason to do it, because you don't need to adopt a short strategy when the long one's winning. You know, if they were getting turned over or they'd lost, you know, 50% of puck outs long, I'd say something. But they were winning huge amounts of the puck out long, getting huge fruition off it in terms of scores, not just possession, flipping scores and big scores. There was no need to go short. So I would, if I was to be any ways critical of him whatsoever, I would say just keep the good thing going. That's it. So if something's happening, it's like in a club game, if you're wing forwards on top, just keep giving Paul the ball at the wing forward. Keep hitting to him, and, you know, until such time as the opposition counteracted. I mean, what if they try counteracted and they do, something else might open up and you shift it over here. You know, so like that now, if Limerick got on top on the short, on the long ball, right, let's go short now. Let's try and create something different. So put 3-12 off your own puck out. And I have to say, we got questioned as to how we thought Cork were going to come out of Munster going back a few weeks ago. And I was always of the opinion, I put great value on these youthful exuberance and the players they have coming through. So now you look at Connolly, you look at Barrett, and you look at Hayes, and you go, look at Toomey. What did the Mavs provide you with the weekend? Geez, they provided some amount of energy, intent, running, pace. And we said before as well, if you want Limerick at Limerick, you've got to run at them. You know, going over them, going around them, or going through them. So what Cork did is they did all three. Generally, you never get all three against Limerick. You get one, if you're lucky. You know what I mean? You never get two. And they got all three. They got fruition going over them. They ran through them, which was fabulous. And they got around them with support runners. So I think all around, this is, I don't want to be too over the top here, but this felt like, you know, that the young players have finally, I suppose, rubber stamped their position in the team, if you know what I mean. And they were mass contributors to Patrick Collins' puck out efficiency being so high. So without them running that pace and coming in support runs to lads who went up and won the ball primary. And if you remember, Hayes, the one who tipped it down, that used to be a Sheffield one from before him. It's very hard to read. Put the hurl up, he'll tip it down, and there's lads coming through at pace. So it's clever, and it was intent. He knew what he was doing. So whether that was off the cuff or pre-planned, I don't care. But it was an all-round team performance on puck outs.
Yeah, Might be pre-planned, but it takes the execution of the skill for it to work as well. A few observations. Joe Bangle, 76. If Cork manages to scrape out a Munster now, they're going to be a seriously dangerous team. That win felt like it was massive at the weekend. I don't know if this is something that you've noticed, Murph. Michael Carr, are Limerick coached to lie over the ball when they're on the deck? They seem to cover the ball, blocking opposition players. Just a question. And then an emoji afterwards. Mm. I don't know. Is this something you've noticed?
I haven't noticed it anyway. I don't think they're coached to maybe cover the ball. Look, to be honest, it's not something I've noticed. I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes. Like, majority of times when players hit the deck, more often than not, it's the player that's going to try and rise the ball, gets a shunt, falls over the ball, and then is just now naturally protecting it, trying to get back up so he doesn't give away a free. It's not something I've noticed to say that it's a ploy. I don't see how it would be massively beneficial unless you're just trying to wear down the clock and you're just trying to cover the ball. Other than that, I actually think Limerick want to move the ball out of there as quickly as possible and get the ball moving forward. So, you know, dragging it into a ruck on the ground and lying over it doesn't really benefit. But maybe it's something I'll have a look at in their games going forward. But it's not something that stood out to me that they deliberately are coached to do it or that it's in the game plan to cover the ball when they're on the deck.
Yeah, it's not something I'd noticed either, Skell, to be honest. I would have kind of bit Murph in this one. I think generally Limerick like to go in and clear a ruck as opposed to trying to slow it down, as this all sounds like rugby terminology, but I think the listeners will probably understand what I mean.
No, I think if you look at certain people like Willard Donoghue, his objective is if a ruck forms, is he's kind of goes in first or second rather, and they just move the ball out. It's rare to see a Limerick situation whereby there's six or seven, that's a bit high, three or four Limerick lads in trying to roll off the ball. They're always on the outskirts trying to get the ball moving because that's where they're doing off a lot of their damage is on breaks where they get runners going through together. So for them to be coached to lay off the ball, that would be counterintuitive to their whole game plan. So I wouldn't agree at that point.
Okay. Murphy, you can take this one from Kevin Ford. Have Clare and Cork now exposed Limerick's so-called invincibility? I would probably temper that before you answer it by saying Clare beat them last year and Limerick went on to lift the cup at the end of the season. Won the two major finals after that defeat. So we're talking about a team who are reigning Munster and All-Ireland champions despite taking an emotionally charged defeat against Clare last year. They still were able to reset. And this time round, Limerick still have all this in their own hands. They beat Waterford. They're going to a Munster final here. Mm. But has anything been exposed? I know about the invincibility maybe being exposed, but have we seen anything that maybe other teams will look at with Limerick? Well, Skell, you've said straight away that it has. Go on, so you take it up first.
It has. Even though their launching platform, as before, has been their halfback line. And their halfback line at the minute are porous. They really are. Even from the goal concession, I know they've only, four goals conceded in this championship so far, but they're conceding them in a manner that we've never seen with Limerick before. And we thought this was just going to be, this was a minor flaw in the system. If you go back to their league game in Páirc Uí versus Tipperary, wasn't Tipperary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did they concede three or four that day?
There you go. It's the first time they conceded three, I think, since 2017.
I'm going to say three or four. I think they conceded four. I could be wrong. But after that performance, I was put it down solely to, look, I've seen this movie before. This is a one-off. This Limerick will fix this. But now we look at their defence and look at their finishing team. We're not about their squad lads, right? I'm going through their finishing team. The finishing team doesn't have the same air of invincibility as what they did, 2 years ago, I could say. But look, come here. In the same bloody breath, they could go on and win their Ireland. Assessing this game specifically, right, their half-back line in the last day were very, very porous, and there's a lot of runners getting through them. And conceding 328, by my count, is the most they've conceded in the last 3 years and by a margin. Mm. So the invincibility, I don't think, is there. And now it's like when we talk about Nora, and they did. They had Nora. Even Ebyes Murphy, in your time, he had a bit of an aura too. But he had an aura, and that had to be overcome too. And so when the aura got overcome and even it dissipated, right, then you can sense a bit of blood. So now I'm looking at, I'd say teams will come to play against Limerick now because they can sense a bit of blood, specifically from 5 to 9, those positions. Because they don't have the same, I don't know, it's the connectivity. You remember, you'd never get runners against Limerick. You always had a packed defence. You could puck the ball along, but there's always seemed to be a plus one there all the time, whoever that used to operate. And maybe I'm not putting enough weight on the fact that Donovan is missing and that he's a vital cog in the wheel after his performances last year. And obviously Casey's missing. The two cases are missing. So if you take out the two cases and you take out Donovan, the team is a different landscape entirely of what it offers you, especially the way they type to play. So I think there's opportunity for teams to get at them. Now, whether they get at them successfully is a different story. I still go back to my point that they won the second half by 6 points. So it's not as if they're dead and buried. and they could go out now in the final round and blitz them and still win the Munster Championship. It's all possibilities. But for what we've seen now in the last three games, and you're on about a passion, Will, I do agree there's a bit of a passion. Now, it was in Limerick previously, where they'd go down at halftime, potentially go down at halftime. We saw it against Galway twice, against Tipperary. They did it against before Clare before. So it's not as if they, you know, they were tuned in for full 70. But even in COVID times, we always talked about the quarters, and their third quarter was always their best period of every game, which is just after halftime. And so, like, that's still in them. It's still there. And they have a great ability to stay in touch, regardless of what deficit they're down, which we've seen in the Clare and Cork game. So I'm not going to say that they're dead and buried, but they have issues to fix. Like, if you go back a few years ago, they had very little issues to fix. And they had people to come in and fix issues, even if they had injuries. But yes, they have things to fix now. It looks like Sean Finn has gone with a hammer, by the looks of it.
Yeah, so the injury update on that one is, it looks like it's a hamstring injury. Declan Hannan was a knock, John Kiley said afterwards, so he should be fine for a couple of weeks' time. Gallan wasn't injured. He said that was a tactical decision to withdraw Gallan. I think Darragh Donovan is coming back towards fitness at this stage, so he'll come back into the team. But there you go. That's another defender gone now, with Finn probably out until the end of the Munster Championship.
God knows, but like, Will, if you go, I remember after the Cork game, the 2021 final, I spoke to I think it was Jura and probably Shane online. I said, Limerick have this, they're conditioned for this type of system and game plan. So they were on the back of 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21. So they were 5 years in the go with that game plan. And to my knowledge, they had no injuries whatsoever. Across the board, they had no injuries. Maybe they had lost Rich English at a stage, but they got covered. And because the cover was so good, you know, it was... I hate to say it, but people really forgot about Richie because of Mike Casey and Darren Monister there. Now, over the last couple of years, there's an awful lot more injuries occurring and testing of the Limerick squad. Now, they're still under Ireland, mind you, but it's still something that you might look at and go, Jesus, they're a little bit susceptible to getting overtaken here. So, who knows? 5-0, we know how hard it is to sit in the Ireland, but it might be the year, it might be the year. We could be sitting here in 8 weeks' time and go, aren't Limerick unreal after coming through all this? You know what I mean? That's it. They're the best team ever.
Like Murph, he's gone full circle there, where eventually he's gone, you know what, actually, yeah, I think there are massive concerns.
It's a possibility. Yeah. Like, honestly, the pendulum swings both ways. Like, we're here looking at this team going, fuck, they're in trouble. Then, which could happen, I'm not going to say I expect it to happen, but I give it 75% they could win the Ireland. You know, that's just the way it is.
But that's a massive difference from, I would say, Murph, at one point we were probably in the 90% about the fact that they were going to make history and do 5 in a row here.
Yeah, we were. And to be honest, like, you still have to be in that. Like, but I think that, like, there's two ways of looking at their invincibility, to bring it back to the start there. Like, one is their invincibility will partly be judged on if they win the All-Ireland or not win the All-Ireland. Like, I don't think anybody would disagree to say that. Like, when we were at the start of the championship, the talk was that two losses in Munster would not see Limerick go out. That's what we were, like, you know, people were talking about, to say, well, that's probably where they might be caught. You know, All-Ireland semi-final, it seems harder that they'd be caught there, or an All-Ireland final. But the conversation was there that, you know, potential was there. So, like, you know, people, I don't think there's been a full air of invincibility. I don't think any team has ever had, oh, you're absolutely fully invincible over the course of a season, that you maybe slip up. Particularly now, like, I mean, when you have more games now than there was 15 years ago, you know, the element to lose a game is there. And, like, at the end of the day, they lost this game by 2 points. And, you know, if you were to give them their time back and a bit of game management and different things, you could very easily see him winning the game. So, you know, whereas we're talking about Cork not getting carried away with the victory, I don't think the rest of the country should either get carried away with, you know, Limerick. But I will say that with the point of view that there is elements there. As Skell said, there's elements there that we just haven't seen before, where we just don't associate it with this Limerick team. And the half-back line being a little bit unsettled there, that's something we just don't associate, because that's been their platform for so long. And even, look, if you want to talk about it as well, look, a few wides Dimmer Burns hit, just because of his lofty standards, we just don't associate that. And maybe we look at that and go, well, is that a sign of maybe just the confidence isn't where it normally is or where it would be? Yeah.
I have to interrupt you, bro. So one of the lads made a very interesting point to me at training the other day. He said, these yellow balls with the chips, and he goes, they're not curling the way I want them to curl. One of our free jumpers. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, no, he said, these aren't going the way I want them to go. You know, sometimes you can put a bit of a slice and she'll curl in for you, depending on what side you strike on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was watching Dimmer Burns over the course of the championship and going, he's right. Because his efficiency is way down.
Do you know what, actually, it's funny you're saying it now, and this is to go into the weeds. We were playing a match yesterday with the club, and Paddy Hogan came out and took a free, and he was using one of the yellow balls, and he struck it. And Paddy did the old classic of, like, I mean, he struck it from R45, and it looked like it was curling in, and Paddy did the thing of running away from the free, you know, so when people look back, you're going to run away. and I looked at it, and the ball looked like, it's funny you're saying, Scale, the ball looked like it was going to curl in. And normally would have, like, you know, and he just curled a little bit and then just stayed and kept going straight and went wide. And Paddy was running away and I went, Paddy, that went wide. And he went, yeah, good one. That's gone wide. And he looked up and here was the umpire waving wide. And he was like, that was curling. And I was like, it was curling, yeah. And then he just curled a little bit and then just stayed. I don't know if there's anything to it, but it's interesting that you've said that. Because
it's huge, because look at the miss hits. Like, he's had 3 miss hits. Yeah. Where the goal he got against Clare was a complete miss hit. That wasn't a pass. That was a miss hit. And he hit one against a miss hit against Tipperary and a miss hit yesterday. Like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist by nature.
That's funny you mentioned it, yeah.
But like, when a lad says to me Saturday morning, these feckin' things won't curl for me.
Yeah.
And then I see it happens Saturday evening.
I'm just putting this in my locker now for when I blare balls wide from 100 yards with the club. And say, them balls aren't curling at all. 30
Sorry, Murph, to interrupt you during your flow. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm gonna play you a minute of a man who hates yellow slitters in a moment in Patrick Horgan. But just I mentioned at the top the amount of scores. So for anyone who's saying there's too many scores in the Munster Hurling Championship, they are on the rise, and particularly in the last few years. So that game at the weekend, Cork 328, Limerick 326, combined total 72. We had combined total 68 a couple of weeks ago with the Clare and Cork game. We'd 69 in 2023 when it was Tip 522, Clare 323 on the opening weekend. 2022, we Clare's win against Waterford, which was 331 to 222. That was the day where Clare really put down the hammer when Waterford weren't going to qualify. 21, we'd Limerick 229, Tipperary 3 goals and 21. 2017 and in 2020, we'd Cork and Tipperary exchange 62 scores. And then you have to go back to the 1980s for the last time it went over 60. So there's a very clear trend there. We talked about, you know, Richie Hogan's comments there. Like, I don't know whether it worries you, Skell, because to me, immediately when that game finished, I thought, that's one of the best games I've ever watched, one of the best games in years in the Munster Hurling Championship. And naturally, you want to give it all the excitement and the hype and whatever else. I think it's right to do so. But is it a bit too loose? If you see it, there's a... We talk about trends. That trend since 2017, Munster Hurling Championship games are just going up and up score-wise.
Yeah, they are. Loose, I suppose. Is the game loose? It is loose, but that's the way the game is structured nowadays. The game is nowadays, an awful lot of it is aimed at is exposing spaces, you know, paper runners, retaining possession, you know, having numerical advantages out the field to create overlaps, which then invariably give you space as you go forward. So I just think it's the way the game has evolved. You know, we've had different types of evolution in the game whereby it's changed over the last, you could say, 20-odd years. And, you know, it didn't lend itself to have huge amounts of scoring. But this where the game is right now, and even where the game has been coached at youth level, from 16s upwards right to every team, is it's all about possession retention. So, like, if you have to go backwards or lateral a couple of times in a phase, so be it. Just keep the ball until the right opportunity presents itself. And what happens is there's more opportunity, so there's more scoring. And I for one, as a neutral, I love scoring. I hate see wides, or I hate, you know, turnovers are grand, and the, you know, for traditionalist defensive systems and turnovers are lovely, but scoring and high quality scoring and scoring from distance and scoring at pace is really, really, you know, is a positive step in the game for me. Now, look, a byproduct is the big scores we get, but I'm not giving out about that. Like, I don't want to see a game scored 6.5 or 110 to 111. So that doesn't really interest me nowadays, because, you know, the excitement level that came with that game the other day. And what I mean by excitement, yes, the finish, right? But knowing that Limerick, right, are 8 points down, and there's still a pretty possibility these lads are going to come back and win it. You know, knowing that, with the way they play, it keeps every single game that you watch with them lads involved, you know, interesting. So, like, they're not dead. They need to be 20 points down before they're dead. You know, and even with that, you'd have a question mark. But I just think, overall, the way the game is, right, you have to get on board. You know, if you play with a traditional 15 across all sidelines, and you play all route one, you are going to get hammered, right? It's all about possession retention, especially in the middle. If you look at turnovers of teams, an awful lot of the turnovers happen in the middle, where you're trying to play through them and play around them. And that's just, again, if you get through the middle, which teams do 20-odd times in a game, score an opportunity. And I don't think people give enough credit to the actual athleticism of players nowadays. I think the fitness levels of hurlers and strength levels, definitely nowadays, is at a level that has been never seen before. And I don't think anyone can contest that. Every team back in the day was fit, you know, fit. But in terms of sheer athleticism and pace, I've never seen the game at the stage it is right now in terms of every team across the board are trying to get to a level like that where they can compete. So Cork's athleticism and pace was the most they've produced, you know, ever. Even to go back to their 03, 04, 05 teams and say fit teams, but this kind of pace that they have now is actually frightening, you know. And that's what we put great, you know, weight on, was when we were kind of judging them at the start of the year, that they have this in their locker and they produced it. So, look, the game is where it is, lads, and I just don't think we should be looking at it in a negative scope. It should be all positive because look what they're producing. Potentially one of the best, I'd say, games ever, yeah.
Was it right up there for you, Murph, in terms of quality as well, before we reset and go to Leinster in a minute?
Look, it was in terms of excitement. I know people are saying that, you know, teams are shooting the lights out and so on. Is that the worst thing? Maybe people want a bit more balance of defending, but it's hard when, like, I think I saw Jackie put up there over the weekend that the art of defending is gone or going anyway. But it's so tough when it's a possession-based game, which everything is orientated towards holding on to the ball, giving the ball to the man in the best position, not the 50-50 balls. Like, good defending, or the days of good defending was when 50-50 balls were coming down, players were going up competing, there was breaking balls and so on. Very hard for, like, defending is now a system nearly more than an individual thing. It's a case of everybody working to block out space and stop runners, as opposed to when it was ball struck down, you were competing with your man going 50-50. So, you know, that element certainly is gone. It's probably gone quite a while now in most matches. But on the other side, as Skell is saying there, like, you know, you have incredible scores there. Like, you have, if teams shooting the lights out, is that a bad thing? I don't think it is a bad thing. And, like, I suppose to expand on what Skell is saying there as well, like, the athleticism, yeah, it's through the roof at the moment. And players are moving so fast and breaking tackles. They're covering enormous amount of ground. Like, they're covering 10, 11K, 13K in games. A huge amount, over 70 minutes. That's a huge amount of running. And every position on the pitch is doing it. It's not a case that the midfielders are doing this or the half forward. Like, the cornerbacks are doing this as well. So, overall, like, I thought it was an incredible game. A few mistakes in between here and there, yeah, but incredible game. And I have absolutely no complaints. If games like that are to be churned up every week, which we won't get, I'd have no complaints.
Okay, right. We'll talk about Leinster now in a sec, but this is what Patrick Horgan had to say to Tommy Rooney. I thought this is interesting, and maybe this is an insight into Patrick Horgan, the man, in his interview after the game as well, where he was ice cool with that penalty and said he actually relishes the chance to take them in the type of occasions that happened like last weekend.
That was probably up there one of the best games we've had as a team down here. This is the best place you can play a match. I've been saying that for the last good few years, but tonight really showed that. Like, you're not going to get any Munster Championship game with that atmosphere out there that we had tonight, and it's probably something that, you know, there should be probably more Saturday night games and stuff like that, more games here. It was unbelievable, but as it is in hurling, as it is in the Munster Championship, we have to forget it as quick as we can and aim our attention towards next week and see you.
We'll talk about next week in a few minutes. Hold on now for a second.
Yeah.
73rd minute, 30 seconds on the clock.
Yeah.
The ball's in your hand. You're facing Nicky Quaid. Am I right in saying Quaid saved the penalty from you a few years ago?
Yes.
Does that go through your head?
Only when you just told me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is going through your head when the game is on the line there? When Cork's championship is on the line?
I didn't see it like that. I suppose I just have to take the penalties. That's my job. And I have absolutely no bother taking it. And I don't feel, I don't know, it was... I actually kind of enjoyed it, down into all the red in the terrace and all the noise being made, like, and it's class. It's like it's the reward from something like that is is worth the pressure you encounter before.
There you go, Patrick Horgan. You know, it's just your season on the line. A penalty, which if you miss it, Cork could be out of the championship. No problem, I'll score. And it was a decent comment that came in from Brian Roster, number one as well. Too old, too slow, 2:10. You're poggy. So there's life in Patrick Horgan yet.
Go again, Will.
Well, now he didn't score 2:10, but you know, the joke obviously is too old, too slow, 2:10. Was it 2:10 he scored against Clare though?
Yeah, I think he scored 2:10 against Clare, yeah.
That's a great one, I have to say.
So not gonna steal that one from him. So there you go. Patrick Horgan slotting away that penalty. Big win for Cork, and they now play against Tipperary this weekend, where if Tip were to lose, Tip are out of the championship. This is like knockout stuff, almost like a de facto old school Munster quarter final at the weekend. And Cork will have to declare their points total at the end of this weekend and wait and see what happens in the last one, which is out of their control. So again, must win the weekend just gone by. Must win this coming weekend, and we'll preview that game in detail on the members pod this week as well. But in Leinster, Murphy, you're going to have to take this up first, because last week you said Kilkenny need to go with the right attitude to Netwatch Cullen Park. They need to put in a professional performance, and this is a chance for, you know, Kilkenny to put a foot and a half into a Leinster final if they had won. But it works out that Carlo stuck with them all the way, and then kind of 7 or 8 minutes to go, I thought, you know, once Kilkenny were down a man, Carlo had seized the initiative within the game, did loads of possession, and ultimately it would result in a contentious free, and Skell can explain why it was given in a second, but Carlo rescue a draw 120 each. I don't think anyone would have denied Carlo that they deserved a point over the hurling that we saw over the 70 plus minutes, but what's happened with Kilkenny there?
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, to give credit to Carlo, it was a great day for them. I mean, you look back at last year after winning the Joe McDonagh, and you know, people were talking about should Carlo be up at this level, and we were probably making the argument that if they don't come up now, when will they come up? They will ship a few beatings, but when will they come up? And I think a lot of Carlo people feel justified after the weekend that the draw with Kilkenny to them is a huge marker to be able to go brilliant. From a Kilkenny point of view, like, I mean, it just, the whole thing just kind of, what Kilkenny brought to it was the attitude wasn't where it should have been. And we've probably spoken about quite a few teams over the course of the last few weeks, turning up with the wrong attitude to a game and very hard to reverse it. You just can't. It's probably the only thing that when you turn up on a day, you can't reverse, is that whatever attitude you brought through the gate, you know, maybe a bit of complacency. And I'm hesitant to say it in many ways, because I don't want to take from you know, the Carlo performance.
But like, I think it's okay, Mark, for two things to be true. On the one hand, that's a savage display by Carlo.
Yeah,
they played well. We already mentioned in a few games, like away to Galway, stuck with it for the best part of an hour, gave Dublin a good rattle where maybe the final scoreline wasn't fair on Carlo's efforts. And you can totally box that off to one side and say Carlo played really well. But you can also say this is Kenny hurling well within themselves at the same time.
Completely, yeah. And that's, you know what, that's the best way to put it, Will, that two things can be true at the same time. But like, you know, from a Kilkenny point of view, I was looking at it going, you just, from the first few balls, you were kind of looking at it going, there's something a little bit off here. And I've been part of those teams, both at club level and at inter-county level, where we arrived at the wrong attitude. And like Tommy, I've probably said it a few times here, Tommy used to always have a great phrase that, you know, the week of a match, that you can't win the game before Sunday, but you can lose it. And I think the losing often is that you get complacent and you maybe give, call it maybe disrespect to the opposition. And, you know, it wasn't helped by going down to 14 men then, but I think the going down to 14 men was an element of frustration also with Kilkenny, that, you know, things weren't going their way. Kilkenny weren't having things thrown away because Carlo weren't letting them. And Carlo were doing whatever they could within their means to frustrate Kilkenny, you know, completely above board, but like getting stuck in, getting scores, not maybe rolling over like people would have expected, and then just stayed with them, you know, when they got the goal, bringing it back to a point, and then it's a few minutes to go, it's very much in the balance then, like, you know, form very much goes out the window. It's a case of who can grind it out here. But for Kilkenny will be looking at this, and Derek Ling and the lads would say, like, we should have never let the game get to this point. And 17 wides in the game as well, I mean, that just goes to show you, like, there was opportunities there for Kilkenny to go and pop them over the bar, keep that bit of distance, and a late goal that goes in. Like, we played Carlo in 2019 in Carlo, and I'm fairly sure they got a late goal in that game, but we were probably up by 7 or 10 points, like, you know, kept that distance. Whereas Kilkenny here, striking wides, inconsistencies, you know, there's carelessness throughout the field in general. You couldn't just put it down to the forwards. And Kilkenny,
do you know where the wides were a concern as well, Murph, when I was watching the game, was that after Keogh gets the goal for Carlo, it's like Kilkenny start to then shoot from very poor positions, and they're not working the ball as much as they normally would. Now, sometimes it leads to an inspiring score, like there was that TJ Reid point from play after he took over a free, and you're thinking maybe Kilkenny have weathered the storm and this is the inspiring score from TJ. But they were pucking a lot of wides, which was also giving the ball back to Carlo to then take the incentive to go back and try and get a score up the other end. And like, it was clear that Carlo at that point were sniffing a bit of blood after the ball had gone into the net as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the thing. It's like when you know, when teams start to panic a small bit and they strike long ball to the edge of the box when it's not the thing to be doing, oftentimes when you're going for shooting for target, that little bit of panic can manifest itself in a way of that you start striking from distance, you're out of the sideline in the 65 and you start striking. Great, if it goes over, do you really gain a whole lot of confidence from it? No, you're just happy that the point has gone up on the scoreboard and you have a little bit of breathing space. But like, Kilkenny will have been training to say that in high pressure situations, we don't vary from the game plan. We carry the ball into good positions. We have runners off the shoulder and we create good shooting opportunities, create scores. And in this situation, they'll be very unhappy that when the pressure was put on them, they panicked a small bit and started striking from distance and kind of kept with it when the wides were still happening. Like, it wasn't even a case that struck one or two wides and went, okay, well, listen, hang on, we need to carry the ball into good position here. Still struck a few more. Now, one or two went over. You mentioned TJ's one there. One or two went over. But it was just that element of, again, decision-making, carelessness, bit of sloppiness, wides. There were so many elements there that it's not because the skill wasn't there or the capability wasn't there. It was came down to that the attitude wasn't there. And then there was a little bit of, I suppose, nerves then once Carlo were staying within touching distance and Carlo were going at him and getting good scores. So it was a combination of good few things. And look, I always want to finish it off by saying, like, Carlo came and did what Carlo had to do, and a draw to them, it's as good as a win because it's a really good marker for them to have. But like, at the end of the day, Kilkenny will be going into training, you know, tonight, tomorrow night. And I'd say, look, Derek will be having a few strong words with Kilkenny, and you know, the lads will all be well aware of that. They'll be mulling it over in their heads over the weekend, and I'm sure they would have went, look, that's not what we're about, and we have to be winning these games if we're serious about really going and competing for an All-Ireland.
I thought the chance was gone, Skell, when Kevin McDonald lands in a free late on. I think it was Blanchfield who got the ball effectively in the corner back position, gets it clear. The ball eventually scrambles over and it's going to be a sideline cut. And then in all of the excitement, it ends up being turned into a free for Marty Kavanagh. So the free is converted and that's ultimately pretty much the last puck of the game. And that's how Carlo finished up 120 apiece. Explain to me why that decision has changed to a free. Because you experienced this firsthand, I think, in the sideline, did you?
I did, and the thing is, we were forewarned about it. So, like, when there's rule changes in Congress, whether they're going to come into effect immediately or the next year, every county board representative official gets the brief outlining the changes, and then they're given to each management team. So we got that brief, and my job to go down through them and see what changes. And one of them was the helmet room. If a helmet comes off, you have to come off the sideline. Which was interesting because it didn't come into, it's not been adopted heavily at senior level. But also another rule is that if you concede a sideline, and let's say you're in possession, or if you're not, and you throw it away into the crowd, as you say, or puck it away, you know, a good distance away from where the spot was conceded, it's an automatic free. So Offaly did it in the second half of the Leinster and Trinity group game. They were going back a few weeks ago. And we shout for free. And in fairness, the referee, he's on the case. But then one of our guys did it as well. He got the ball and threw it in over the dugout, free to Offaly. So, and in fairness, I couldn't argue because, you know, we knew about the rule, we were pre-informed, and it was still done. So that's the free. So in Tom Phelan's case, he gets the ball, wins possession. He's running on the sideline.
He throws
in the crowd.
Yeah.
And as you're watching, I'm going, that's free. That's a free. Mm. And next thing, when the ref stands up, puts his hand out, I could feel people online going, what the hell was that for? You know what I mean? Rewinding them back the last 30 seconds. But yeah, it was a free. He adjudicated correctly and made the right decision. But the thing is, it's the responsibility of the Kilkenny management team to inform the players. I can only presume, I'm 99% sure they did inform them. And I'm just going to put it down to a mental lapse from Tom Phelan's behalf where he did that. Just a mental lapse and probably a bad habit. So ultimately, cost them a point.
I presume, Skell, what happened there was Tom got caught up in that emotion of the fact that Kilkenny were hanging on a little bit, and it's like, I'll just kill a little bit of time. I throw the ball off to the side. I'm going to slow this down just ever so slightly. Probably just even think about the punishment of the free. It's probably just thinking, look, I'm going to just get back into position and I'm going to make sure that we defend this line ball which is about to come in.
Yeah. Well, I can fully understand his mind space in that time is that we need to retain possession here. Even if the ball is dead, or I need to retain it somehow or kill it for a few seconds. And how to get around that, it's a tricky one because that's what the rule is aimed at. The rule is aimed at the reverse, getting the ball back in play as soon as possible. So I think if he just held the ball, handed it to the linesman, you know what I mean, and then walk slowly back from the marker, I think that's probably your best option in terms of slowing time down. But like, it's just, I agree with you, Murph, in the sense that like we questioned that. I would have questioned my own boys' attitude last week, and I was looking at Kilkenny in the first half, and like the attitude across the board, even the sending off, was just, that was so rare, I have to say, from a Kilkenny perspective. I don't know, maybe there is, you can think of an instance, but I can't at the minute, whereby that kind of incident happened. So rare. You don't see that incident happening very often, you know. I can't think of one, and that's very uncharacteristic of not even this Kilkenny team, but just Kilkenny as a whole. So even you put in those couple of mental lapses, and it all contributed to bringing the level of the performance down. Carlo, you know, obviously the level of performance goes up, and next thing you're in parity, you know. But the sending off, I think, had a huge. It was behind the attitude and behind the application. It was the second biggest reasoning as to why this game, if in the finish as it is, because like if you go down to the shots situation, he got sent off in 20 minutes. Is that right? 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, Kilkenny had 16 shots in 20 minutes. You know, but the way they were playing was they had plenty of personnel in the middle, you know, and they were able to go get through Carlow. And then for the next 55 minutes, you know, they had 25 shots, which was way down on the level you could see. So when you consider how Kilkenny's game was affected by the sending off, whereby you had numerical, you didn't have an advantage anymore. It was numerical, you know, parity, you could say.
Yeah.
Carlo, it didn't allow Carlo to push up everyone, and then Kavanagh can sit back.
Well, Carlo were working with a sweeper at the start anyway, and Shane Murphy was kind of just cruising around the field.
Was it two sweepers? I always call them two sweepers. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
there was one definite sweeper that I could see, but maybe it was a case that like there was players just kind of sitting back, and there was a case of that, you know, an extra midfielder would drop back or something. But it seemed to me that they had the sweeper from the start, and then once Killian Doyle was sent off, then it was a case that they didn't really have to do anything then. It was just a case to go man to man. So Carlo were already actually ready for that situation, because sometimes, you know, when you have the extra man, the player gets sent off. We saw it against Wexford, Wexford at the weekend. Nearly the team that gets the man sent off responds. But when the opposition are already set up and ready to go, that in terms of what are we doing with this extra man, he's already in position, he knows where he's meant to be. It's kind of a good platform. And plus as well, Kilkenny now didn't have that Roman player running around the field picking up that extra ball, because Kilkenny will probably know what to do with that player as well. So, no, like, I mean, it was just, it fed into, like, I mean, a few minutes before halftime where, Carlo stayed within touching distance, were able to go in and resettle at halftime and then go and say, listen, lads, 14 men, we're in with a shout here, let's go at it. So, like, I mean, it was just, you know, 20 minutes in, it's rare enough people get sent off 20 minutes into a game. And I think it fed into the whole thing that it was just a mindset. Like, I mean, there was frustration there from mentally not being ready, and, you know, Carlo getting stuck into Kilkenny, and that just manifests itself by turning around, a lash out, uncharacteristic. But I think, again, that just reflects that the mindset was just a little bit not there, and they were getting frustrated, you know.
What's the feeling in Kilkenny, Murph? Because it's easy to say, look, this is Owen Cody's missing, Adrian Mullen's missing, two of the key forwards, and that's a huge impact on this team at the moment. And look, Kilkenny are still in a very strong position to get to the final. It's still very much in their own hands. Or is there a concern about some of the performances like we saw against Carlo? Maybe even to go back to the league, that first half performance against Offaly, where it just wasn't there sharpness-wise. I mean, what's going on that this, maybe there is that lack of sharpness at the moment?
It's a hard one to put your finger on at the moment. From anything I seem to hear, training is going really well. They've had their injuries, but every team has their injuries at the moment. Is there concern in Kilkenny? I don't think there's concern in Kilkenny. Like, there's obviously, you know, in at the concert last night, people were kind of saying, geez, what's the story with the result the weekend and different things. But I don't think there's an element of concern. Like, there's results that pop up every so often. And again, this is not to play it down or anything, because and not to play down or made light of it, maybe for the Carlo support as well, because it's an important win for them. But like, we've had results years ago where it felt a lot more damning than this is. And I'd point back to 2012, the Leinster final, probably mentioned it several times, but when Galway beat us well in the Leinster final, people really felt that was a nail in the coffin. That was a significant defeat. But the only element there that decides whether it's a significant defeat is how you react to it. Like, at the end of the day, Kilkenny can go, right, well, we drew a Carlo, doom and gloom, and let's look at this and say, well, what were the negatives out of all this? Or they can take the positives and say, this is a kick in the arse. And sometimes a kick in the arse, as lad says, is better than a pat in the back. Like, as in, you get a kick in the arse, you say, is that what we're about? No, it's not what we're about. We have two serious games coming up now in Dublin and Wexford. If we play like that, we will be best and we'll be out of the Leinster Championship. Or you get your show on the road. Like it's at the moment, I'd imagine Derek's going in saying, lads, we've given a lot of people opportunities and leave it open. We spoke about it last week where Brian would leave it open and say, there's people here not performing. Leave it open and say, look, lads, if you want a jersey, when you get your opportunity, you'll take your opportunity. If you don't want a jersey, you know, there's the door, or strong words like that. Sometimes that's needed. And I think for a lot of players, sometimes these kind of results, like, they're huge fuel to the fire. From being in the camps, I wouldn't be going, look, oh, this is doom and gloom, Anton. I think a lot of lads will take this and go, look, lads, this is not what we're about. If we needed a reminder that our attitude needs to be right, well, here's our reminder. Now let's build. And look, take it as a positive. Build, take the positives. But if you're to take the negatives and go down the wormhole, that will be the end of your year and you'll find yourself getting into a rut. So the one thing I would say from our loss against Galway in 2012 and similar to this against Carlow, would be a case of it depends on how you react now. What do you take from this game? How do you react and how do you go forward? And that'll be the defining factor at the end of it. It won't be the result. It'll be how you react to it.
State of play in Leinster, by the way. So Dublin top the table at the moment. Two wins and a draw from the games that they would have been targeting with the way that the schedule was laid out. So they're on 5 points. Kilkenny are unbeaten so far. The two draws, the draws against Galway and now against Carlow. They've got one win, two draws so far. So they are on 4 points, having opened with that big win against Antrim. And then you've got Wexford and Galway, who've both played three games on 3 points apiece. Antrim are second bottom with the win that they had against Wexford. They've got one win from their three games and 2 points. And Carlow have got the draw, which has come off their three games so far. So they've got 1 point at the bottom. So relegation is still very much wide open. Who goes to the final and who qualifies is still very much wide open at the moment. But Skell, a big boost for Dublin at the weekend with the way particularly that they finished that game out very efficiently. I'll mention Fancy Hurling in a few moments, but Donald Burke doing the business for me with 1-11 when I had him captained. 1-8 coming from freeze during the game. Outside of that, you got Sean Curry and Conor Burke both putting over 5 points. Goal for Paul Crummie. Brian Hayes getting a goal as well. Keno Sullivan with 2 points. Really good share of scores. 3.32 is serious scoring. I mentioned last week, unfortunately, we couldn't see this game because none of the Dublin games have been televised or streamed so far. But Dublin beating Antrim in the end, 3.32 to 1.18. Your old boss, Micheál Donoghue, was saying afterwards that if it does end up in a mini-league, this could help quite a bit. The Dublin have got a big, substantial win against Antrim on Saturday, just gone as well. So Dublin really, first three games, have done the business here. Gone to Wexford Park, rescued a draw, have won the two games they would have been expected to win. And probably anything for Dublin out the last couple of games would be a bonus. But getting to 5 points in three games is good going.
Yeah, I suppose if you were to say what was the realistic scenario, or potentially even go worst case scenario for Dublin after three games, you'd say 4 points out of six. And what's the best case scenario? It's 6 out of 6. So they're landing in the middle at 5 out of 6. And what they've done is they've given themselves a real, not trying to just diminish their efforts, give them a real fighting chance with two, really speaking, two very hard games to come. Now, when I say hard games, like the level of difficulty seems to have dropped a touch now, because when you look at the way Galway performed last week and ultimately the way Kilkenny performed on Saturday, you know, the gap isn't as far, well, in my mind anyway, it's not as far or as I thought it was. You know what I mean? Now, like, but I still expect, you know, in a couple of weeks' time that Galway will go and do the business. But it makes it a crunch operation at this stage now, whereby every team, I think every am I right in saying that every team in Leinster has points? That'd be accurate, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they all have points to say, which is a great reflection, you know, on the championship as a whole, because I think probably wrongly it's been kind of just discouraged a bit when you obviously compare it against Munster. But in terms of excitement and even the quality of hurling we're seeing, you know, it's a different type of hurling if you ask me, but, you know, definitely from excitement level, we're getting it in abundance. Unfortunately, it's been at the expense of some us more from Kilkenny and Galway sometimes, but I think everyone's got a lash of the whip now, including even Wexford up in the Antrim, etc. So, look, I think it's going to be a tricky one. I still, when you start doing the calculations and permutations, right, it's a bit clearer than Munster. Munster is a clusterfuck at the minute. I don't know who's going to beat who. Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't know what's going to transpire there. But ultimately, in this championship, I think Kilkenny are going to win out. You know, that's what they have to do, and Galway win out. So what I mean with that is, I'd say, obviously, Galway have a tricky one this week up in Corrigan Park. But I do expect them to win. Like, again, it's a bit like I was saying about Tipperary being forewarned about Cork. Galway have been forewarned about Antrim up in Corrigan Park. So they have to go and do the business. And like every team is given a response after a poor performance, I expect that to happen. So I expect Galway to win in Antrim. I expect Kilkenny Murph, like, that you're not going to lose out. I expect you to beat Wexford when the time comes in your home patch, which is not, I know, historically foregone conclusion. But I still think the result that we said at the start of the year would be the same as where as it will be now, the same as I said at the start of the year. But the big question is who finishes in third, if you ask me. Now, I look at, I know you, the people listening here go, oh, he's already saying Kilkenny go in the final. And I still think it's going to happen. I still do think it's going to happen, but Wexford Dublin.
I don't think you'd be on your own on that expectation either. Like, I mean, obviously these are the two pedigree teams for the last few years. Like, Will Norris raises a fair point as well. Given, I think Will is a Kilkenny fan as well. Given Kilkenny's injury list at the moment, given we've seen Wexford beat Galway by 8 points and Kilkenny only drawing with Galway, is next weekend now a huge chance for Dublin Hurling to beat the Cats? I think we'll preview this properly on the members pub, but there is that opportunity there.
Well, there is, but Kilkenny have historically performed really well in Parnell Park against Dublin.
I would say at home against Dublin as well. They've been dominant.
They've really, really clipped them. And again, I think the Dublin game was coming at a very, very right time for Kilkenny, to be honest. I think it's coming at a time whereby they have to, you know, travel again, don't mind you, and I suppose show Derek Ling what they're made of. Is that the right way of saying it, Murph? Like, really show what they're made of, see what kind of bottle they have, what they have in them. I think they're going to show it. And the same day, I think, we're going to beat Antrim. So then what you're going to have is the two teams put themselves above each other. It comes down to a final day showdown. Can Wexford top Kilkenny? Can Dublin top Galway? So it lines itself up in a nice manner for, you know, a final day excitement. But ultimately, I expect the results to be the same. But you have to give credit where credit is due, let's say. Dublin have kept themselves in position. You know, really have kept themselves in position to be in position. So it's not as if they're, you know, we're ruling them out across all levels here, because they've played poorly and only have, let's say, 4 points, but they've kept themselves in position. They're undefeated, but still at the same breath, Kilkenny, right? Everyone thinks they were beaten the weekend. They weren't beaten, lads. They still got a very, very valuable point, you know what I mean, which is critical in this stage. And I think the point that you've won, you know, is valuable, whereas the point that Wexford lost against Dublin was important, but the 2 points they lost in Antrim was way more important, you know what I mean? So now if Kilkenny go and beat Dublin have the same deficit as Wexford. So I think that's why I say the permutations for me are a lot clearer, but it still relies on the big two winning out.
Yeah. Look, a lot's going to be decided even on this penultimate weekend coming up. Gary as well making the point. I know the lads agree. They've already mentioned it there. Who said Leinster hurling is boring? The guy's opinion is the best Leinster championship we've had in a number of years. I think it's probably the best Leinster championship, Murph, we've had since 2019.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I mean, the results have been, every team, as Gettle is saying there, every team has gotten something from the games. There's been a few haymakers of results. There's been a nice bit of excitement. It's just not playing out the way we thought it was going to play out, which is probably quite often very good. It means there's been a few surprises. It's been a few of the underdogs have stepped up and gotten results, and a few scouts as well. So that's always great. It's always healthy. And, you know, when we have the conversation, I think at the start of next year, and after Joe McDonagh Cups and all this about teams stepping up and teams coming in, these are the things that will point back to say, well, this is why we're doing it and this is why it's worthwhile. And, you know, seeing your Antrims go and get victories, seeing Carlow's 1 year up from Joe McDonagh getting a result against a team that were in the All-Ireland final last year. These are things that maybe give us light at the end of the tunnel to say, yeah, well, actually, we could be headed in the right direction here. But the Leinster Championship, in fairness, it's trumped up this year. It's given us a few great results, in fairness.
We'll preview the games on the members pod. Just before we leave the main pod for this week, fancy hurling. Look at this.
Oh.
730 points.
I'm telling you.
William,
congratulations. You're flying it. But I was, because I made a few haymaker of decisions, and I was there going, for Skell the first week, having not changed around his players, or the second week, I was like, oh, he's definitely gained on me this week. So when you put up those, I was like, oh, grand. Will, I'm delighted for you to be out in front as long as I'm just ahead of schedule. I don't care how it looks.
But I saw Kieran Joyce not playing and Paddy Deegan not playing.
There were so many things where I was I was just hearing things going like, oh, I have him and I have him and I have him. And yeah, my team must be in bits. And like, I have to, a man I married several times, a great fella, Patrick Horgan. I'll say it now. I'll never take him out of my team again. I got confused. I panicked on the days. I panicked and I went, right, well, after the loss to Waterford, Declan Dalton's coming back in. Who's going to be on the freeze here? You know, people can have off days, different things, mightn't get much from play. I said it last week, fucker goes and gets 210 and then he goes out and gets 111 this week. And I'm like, yeah, I took him out of my team. Why did I take him out?
So, yep. So I think it was was it 111 each for Donal Burke and Patrick Corgan was the key to my success in the week gone by.
So where are you now nationally? You must be out there, yeah.
I think I'm doing okay. Yeah, I have it there somewhere. So I'll have a look and I'll stick it up on Twitter later on. But I'm on 7:30 now for the tournament. Will, yeah. Murph is on 671 and Scale is on 5.
I will say Will and particularly Murph. These fucking graphics weren't here last year, were they?
When Will was here. No, the boys in Fancy Hurling have been sending these on, and I'll routinely ignore them if I'm doing poorly. But when I'm doing well, they'll definitely get a push on the pot each.
Will's a good man for a graphic, but it's in the favour.
I have adopted the ignore them now. This stage, so I'm finished.
Yeah.
My year is done. Right, what should be?
I'm very much of the thinking that if I have a terrible week next week or in 2 weeks' time, I'll be like, geez, sorry, lads, we were recording on Sunday night. I didn't see the graphic in time, didn't get a chance to show it. But
Skeet has gone on and he's mute in Fantasy Hurling, just mute. Do not want to come up in any conversation.
Oh, just unfollow. Mute, it's gone. Don't even come after me for the dinner next year.
If that's where you're at, I will have a look at the league and I'll see where we're at. I'll tweet it out later on because I definitely saw a top 10 of our league doing the rounds at some point as well. So we've got some clever people there. I don't by any means think I'm going to win this, but I will celebrate the small wins like the weekend just come by. Paul Murphy, James Skell, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, lads.
Sound lads.
Should I see?
And of course, the Hurling Pod is brought to you by Borgosh Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Borgosh Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.